It is now my honor and privilege to turn the program over to our Secretary of Agriculture, Mr. Jim Reese.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. It is truly an honor that we are able to have this one-year anniversary celebration here with Congressman Lucas and yourself. We appreciate you coming to Oklahoma. This really is the utopia of agriculture today. And so, obviously, the crowd, we appreciate everybody coming. I just want to, before I introduce Congressman Lucas, I just want to remind everyone what it took to get this farm bill passed. And, you know, I know most of you in the room are junkies like myself, but I remember sitting up late at night watching the farm bill debate and Congressman Lucas making his appeal to both sides of the aisle, and that he had reached out to each one on both sides of the aisle, and when he finished his debate, they gave him an ovation, and then they subsequently voted against the bill. Nonetheless, it was his effort to work with everyone. I also was at the Cotton Bowl one weekend and enjoying the festivities with his wife while he was on the phone talking to Secretary and Speaker Boehner and Congressman Peterson and all the rest of the delegation, trying to get all of these complicated things worked out. So it was such a, you know, I don't know that it's been said that it was the first farm bill ever to fail on the floor. I don't know, Congressman, but it was important. It was important for people to know just how difficult this bill was to pass in the first place. So with that, Congressman Lucas, I appreciate all of your work that you did all that time for the 2.5 years it took to pass that bill. And Secretary, we appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Secretary. And Secretary Vilsack, if you'd humor me just for a moment to comment about the Farm Bill process, and then I'd like to offer a little introduction of you and your observations, and then we'll visit with all our friends. I've known Jim Reese for 24 years, something forever. So Jim's watched me work through a lot of challenges and watched me deal with a lot of issues and knows that generally I'm a relatively calm fella. Generally, I'm fairly focused, and generally I try to stay on point. But this Farm Bill process that Secretary Vilsack and I and the House and Senate Ag Committee worked through this time was as challenging as anything perhaps since the 1930s. We found ourselves, as we began this process in 2011, and in all fairness, my predecessor, my ranking member, Chairman Peterson, I was his ranking member, and under the House rules, if your party is the majority and you're the senior member of the committee, you're the chairman or chairwoman. And if you're in the minority and you're the leader of your side of the committee, you're the ranking member. So my first 2 years of my 6 years of leading my side of the room, I was the ranking member. And Colin Peterson and I began the Farm Bill process way back in 2010 with the first opening hearing to begin the craft the next five-year Farm Bill. Lo and behold, that fall, things changed rather dramatically, and Colin and I reversed roles, but still maintained the good working relationship that we had together. Even though I'm from Oklahoma, he's from Minnesota, the good working relationship we had. But shortly after I became chairman, the leadership in the House and the Senate and the President agreed to a process we referred to at the time as Super Committee. And the Secretary remembers all of a sudden we had a responsibility to save X billions of dollars, but also a window of opportunity to perhaps use that to pass a farm bill in what we all knew was going to be a very difficult situation. And how many hours did you and I and your staff and the Ag Committee staff and the House and the Senate Secretary work to put together that hurry-up farm bill proposal for the Super Committee? Now, it never proceeded because the other committees who'd been assigned savings targets couldn't get their work done. They couldn't get their work done like the House and Senate Ag Committee. But it was a great exercise in working through the policy changes that would have to happen if we were going to continue the Farm Bill safety net. So with the super committee process collapsing, even though the ag committees had done their work, 2012, in essence, we began the regular markup process. Senate did their work, passed a bill, passed it across the floor. We did our work in the House Ag Committee, passed a bill, passed on a bipartisan way, passed beating everyone's expectations on savings across the board. But unfortunately, that summer, going into that fall, my leadership in the United States House, and you know I have a tendency to be pretty much to the point on these issues, I said I didn't have the votes and I wouldn't be able to pass a bill, and they weren't going to bring the bill to the floor if it wouldn't pass. I understood that, acknowledged that, wasn't very happy about that because we'd worked really hard to get to that point. So we wound up extending the farm bill for a year. The elections came. The nature of the body changed just a little bit, and we started all over again in 2013. Now, the first time the farm bill went across the floor, as Jim alluded to, was a challenging experience for me because I think all of you know, Linda and I are Calcaf people, 2 hours west of here. I'm an ag econ guy from Oklahoma State University, land-grant college, multi-generations of, as I like to say, dirt farmers and debtors. That kind of goes with being a dirt farmer, right? Being a debtor. So this issue mattered greatly to me. And a number of you heard me point out down through the years that it's not just good policy, but having been raised by the people who suffered through the drought of the 50s in Oklahoma and the Southwest, having been raised by my grandparents, people who were young men and women in the Depression and the drought of the 1930s, this was always very personal for me. It wasn't just an academic exercise. It's what happens when things get really, really, really bad. Ask anybody in the oil field right now. What happens? So when we went to the floor, when I finally got leadership to acknowledge that we had a bill that had sufficient savings, sufficient reform to go to the floor, we went to the floor. And in the course of some of my very idealistic friends offering amendments towards the end of the debate, because leadership said when we did this farm bill, it's going to be an open process. Everybody can offer amendments. We did hundreds of amendments in committee and on the floor. My friends made sufficient changes in the nutrition title, things that my town meeting constituents would like a lot, that we lost enough Democrats on one side, we had enough Republicans on the other side who weren't going to vote for it, that the whip count we had turned against us. And I'll never forget my ranking member, Colin Peterson, coming across the floor to me to say, that last amendment cost us 30 votes. I can't deliver the 42 or 45 that I had this morning. You've got to carry it on your own. And my floor leader came down to me and said, basically, can you pass the bill? Do you want to pull the bill? Now, this is the first comprehensive bill going across the floor. Now, I looked my floor leader in the eye, and the secretary's humoring me with this because sometimes in therapy you have to get it out of your system. My floor leader came to me and said, you want to pull the bill? Now, I understood the lay of the land. The right and the left didn't want a farm bill. The middle was concerned about the cost. My concern was that if we pulled the bill, there'd never be a bill. That in 3 or 4 weeks there would be an attachment to another piece of legislation repealing the 38 and 49 law, and there'd be no farm bill. So I looked in the eye, and I said, let's run it. And as Jim alluded to, I went to the floor. In 5 minutes, attempted to discuss agricultural economics from 1933 to the present, attempted to discuss nutrition policy, attempted to discuss the demeanor and decorum of the House. Got a rousing ovation from all my colleagues. Standing ovation. Both sides of the room. And the bill went thump. But you know, the next day the Washington Post ran a story with a series of pictures. Now the secretary is aware of this, but you all might be surprised that I've actually had a photo spread in a major national publication. But the photo spread was the picture of me waving my arms like, as my grandmother would have said, a tent preacher in the course of the debate. The next picture was the look on my face with the scoreboard in the background as we went down. And the third picture, which is what triggered it all, which fascinated the Washington Post reporter, not necessarily one of my political allies, was the line of Democrats one side on the floor and the line on the other, giving me their condolences. And he made the comment, it looked like a country funeral. They understood I'd tried. They understood what had happened. So we split the bill apart, put it back together, passed it, and ultimately that became law. The direct payments went away. Tremendous changes, as the Secretary and his able-bodied staff, both on the national level and state level, know. A lot of things to do, a lot of decisions to be made. But ultimately, we got it done. And the final passage of that bill surprised every political prognosticator, every political pundit back east. But how did we get it done? Well, a strong sense of rural America and production ag in the House Ag Committee. A strong sense of that in the Senate Ag Committee, a willingness to work together. But I will say, while the Secretary and I may not necessarily agree on every comma or every dotted I, I must, as I turn the microphone to the Secretary, acknowledge this. At every stage of the way, and more often the tougher it got, the more frequent, the Secretary demonstrated a willingness to work with me and my cohorts to act as catalyst. I don't know how many times I went down to your office or how many times you came up to the Hill to meet with all of us, because the Secretary understood and appreciated, as an old governor from Iowa, and no offense, Secretary, but I explain in my town meetings, Iowa is a cornfield with some cities in it. That's actually a compliment, by the way. The Secretary had an understanding and an appreciation for what we had to do and put himself and his people at our disposal. And there were times when, as he once told me, if encouraging you publicly or privately with various members of leadership will help, I will. If criticizing you helps, I will. But he understood the importance of getting it done. And we've got it done. Now, there are a lot of challenges out there. It's a dramatic change, a lot of decisions to be made, some decisions coming soon. A lot of circumstances beyond our control, and we'll talk about those in a moment. But at least, my friends, you have a safety net on the books. You have a safety net predicated on options so you can make decisions for what is best for your farm, your family. And I'd like to think a bill that no matter what happens in the future, we have something to work off of. My single biggest regret, before I turn to the Secretary, our friend, I regret that we didn't make this Farm Bill permanent law. Now, I know not everyone in this room agrees with me. I know the pundits back east don't agree with me. But I don't know how hard the next Farm Bill is going to be. I wasn't on high blood pressure pills. I didn't have gray hair when we started this. I don't know how hard this next Farm Bill will be. We need to do everything we can in implementation and in working through the process to use this in case this is what we have for years to come. And with that, Mr. Secretary, thank you for coming on this one-year anniversary. Man, I don't know that I ever want to have quite that much fun again.
Well, Mr. Chairman, once a chairman, always a chairman. It's certainly great to be in your home state. And I think I just want to reiterate what the Secretary indicated about the leadership that Frank Lucas provided in this process. Getting a bill through Congress, as everyone knows, is not an easy process, and it wasn't really designed when the Founding Fathers established this country. It wasn't really designed to be easy. It takes strong leadership, and it takes individuals who understand and appreciate why legislation is important. No one in the Congress had a greater feel and a greater connection to people in rural areas and to producers than Frank Lucas. And because of that concern, which was shared by Colin Peterson, an equally diligent and effective leader on the Democratic side, and on the Senate side, certainly Senator Stabenow really worked very hard to get this done, Senator Roberts as well. The key here was basically working and not giving up. And Frank Lucas did not give up, and it's he understands why this was so important to get done. We didn't have a disaster assistance program for livestock producers in effect during this process of the 2012 drought. We didn't have export promotion assistance available.
We didn't really know what the safety net was going to be for producers. We didn't have a dairy program that was working as well as it needed to for all of our dairy producers. We didn't have the tools to help create and expand a rural economy. We had conservation programs, but we didn't have the capacity in those conservation programs to encourage others to participate and to leverage those resources. So it was important and necessary for a bill to get passed. And it would not have been passed but for the strong leadership of Frank Lucas. And I hope everybody in this room and everyone who follows this in Oklahoma understands what a great job he did. And during the course of this time, we became, I think, friends. You know, if that's, it's okay to say that now, right? I won't say that next year in election year. I'll do whatever you want me to do. But you know, this is the way the system's supposed to work. And it works when you've got people like Frank Lucas, who understand at the end of the day what this is truly all about. It's not about Frank Lucas. It's not about the Ag Committee. It's about producers. It's about people who live, work, and raise their families in rural areas. And just to give you a sense of how important this was, let me just briefly go through the process of the implementation of this very, very strong and good bill on all counts. And I hats off to all of the folks who work at USDA who have worked extraordinarily hard to implement this bill, I think in record time, with record efficiency. Those livestock producers I talked about, last week when I checked the numbers, we had made over 519,000 payments through our FSA offices to livestock producers who suffered losses during 2011, 12, and 13. Over $4.6 billion of help and assistance at a time critically needed. We set up the dairy program, and dairy producers responded. Over 50% of the producers decided to participate in 2014 and 2015 when dairy prices were reasonably high. About 55% of that number have purchased up protection, and as dairy prices have come down a bit, smart move on the part of those producers because they may very well see some help and assistance in the latter part of this year. When prices come down a bit because of production, and not just in the U.S., but around the world. We got those export promotion programs back in play, and we had a record year of ag exports. Ag exports stabilize income for farmers. 30% of all farm gross sales connected to exports, certainly important to Oklahoma producers. And those exports oftentimes are the margin of profit, if you will, in agriculture generally. Now we're looking at another strong export year, and hopefully with a little work, another opportunity for Democrats and Republicans like Tom Vilsack and Frank Lucas to work together, we'll try to get these trade bills through the process and hopefully open up this amazing new opportunity in Asia through the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It could increase overall exports by $123 billion, help encourage job growth here in the U.S. That's certainly a tremendous opportunity for ag producers. We also began the process of instituting the new safety net programs, ARC and PLC. Would strongly encourage folks, and this is one message I really want to emphasize today, don't wait until the last minute. The problem with waiting until the last minute is it will overload those FSA offices with paperwork and the processing, and the result may be that we may not get it done in a timely way. If you've made a decision, if you've done the numbers, if you've gone on the website and used the tool, if you've attended any one of literally thousands of meetings that have taken place across the country with producers, and you know whether it's ARC or PLC that's best for you, make the election now. There's no reason to wait. You know what? If, a month from now, if you figure out, geez, I want to rethink that decision, you can come in and change it. But the sooner folks get in, the better off I'm going to feel about our ability to handle the influx of business at the end of the end of March. We've had roughly about 72,000 producers already make the election, but that's a really small percentage of the overall farming community in this country. Worked very hard on the crop insurance and got the supplemental crop insurance option up. We got the Stax program going. We've already made cotton transition payments. Last time I checked, it was over $500 million of cotton transition payments that have been made through USDA. We're really excited about the response to the Regional Conservation Partnership Program. 115 projects, $372 million that will be invested in conservation, matched at least dollar for dollar by outside sources. So we're talking about close to three-quarters of $1 billion of conservation that's going to take place in areas all across the country in all 50 states. We've really worked hard on the research side as well. This bill had the foresight to create a supportive research initiative that will support our internal and external researches that we do at USDA. We frankly don't have enough money, even with this new research. We don't have enough money in research and ag research. Lots of challenges, lots of issues. If we're going to feed 7, 9 billion people in the next 20, 30, 40 years with weather issues, with water issues, with disease and pest issues. So we want to see research. So we've set up the foundation. They're having, they've already got the board set. They've got a chairman who's a guy, I think, who understands generally this part of the world. He doesn't come from Oklahoma. He comes from Kansas. Dan Glickman is the chair and is working very hard to get the initial research projects funded. This is a project where $200 million of federal money will be matched at least by $200 million of outside resources. So one of the interesting things about this bill is the focus on leverage and partnership. Focused on rural development, getting programs in place. You know, our rural development area often doesn't get the attention it deserves. You know, people are surprised, Mr. Chairman, when I tell them that we've already done 905,000 home loans since I've been secretary. People go, you actually do home loans? I go, well, yeah, we actually do. If the USDA were a bank, we'd be the fifth or sixth largest bank in the country, and we're now in the process of looking at the portfolio that has over 1 million loans to see whether there's a way in which we could use that portfolio more effectively to get more help and assistance to rural folks. So bottom line, lots of areas, you know, we've got the farm credit programs up and going. We made slight tweaks to this, focused on beginning farmers, a little benefit on both the interest and credit side and on the crop insurance side, focused on local and regional food systems and the expansion of that, which is now helping close to 200,000 producers across the country have an alternative market to a commodity-based market where they can basically dictate the price more effectively. So it's a great farm bill. It's a farm bill that is focused on these returning veterans that we're so proud of. Many of them come from these small towns, want to go back, don't know what the opportunities are. So now we have a veterans liaison, Karis Gutter, who works in the FSA office. He's going to basically lead our effort to make sure that folks know about all the programs that are available to help returning veterans get into the business of farming and get back to these rural areas and provide their leadership and their energy. So our team, I think, has done a very effective job in this first year. Still have a little work to do on some of the issues, actively engaged and conservation compliance, but we will work through those processes very, very soon. And get them done very soon. We have a very specific timeline and a specific process that we go through. So, Mr. Chairman, I want you to know we have worked really hard to implement the bill that you worked so hard to get passed, and we are anxious to see the impact of it. And I think that this farm bill and this debate, and I'll close with this, it's allowed us to elevate for just a period of time the rest of the country's focus on the importance of rural America. Rural America is not only the place where almost all of the food that we produce domestically comes from. It's not just the place where most of the water that folks in urban centers drink is impacted by. It's not just the place where almost all the domestically produced energy, regardless of what kind, whether it's oil and gas or whether it's renewable, it's usually located in rural locations. It's not just the place that all the city folks go to recreate, you know, when they want to get away from it all. It's also that place where it represents 15% of America's population, but nearly 40% of America's military. So it's a place of significance and importance. And what the Farm Bill did is it gave us an opportunity to begin the process of educating the rest of America why it's important to invest in rural folks, why it's important to invest in our agriculture. It's because we not only have the greatest diversity of food and the safest food and the most affordable food, but every single American who is not a farmer as a debt of gratitude they owe to that farmer, because we have delegated, those of us who are lawyers or teachers or engineers or whatever, we've delegated the responsibility to feed our families to somebody else. And we have a relatively small percentage of our population that we've delegated that responsibility for, and they not only produce enough for us, they produce enough to export and create jobs as a result of the export market. So it provides an extraordinary freedom that Americans oftentimes take for granted. So maybe with the implementation of this farm bill and the opportunity to talk about farm programs across the country, maybe we can get folks to have just a smidge more appreciation for the people who farm and produce and the folks who live in these rural areas, because they're awfully important to this country and have made this country the strongest and greatest nation on earth.